So let me introduce the next speaker, and it's Ken McNeely from CDC. It's a privilege to have Ken here. Although I've only been at CDC 8 years, Ken's been at CDC for 20 years, and he's quite a veteran. He's at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, so he's at NIOSH. And Ken is, from my perspective, Ken's one of the IT leaders in the agency, and he received a master's in computer science from Georgia State, and Ken really is a voice of reason and a voice of perspective, and is really trying to provide that sense of, when it comes to technology, what is best for the agency, what is really the right direction we should be going. And it's really great to have Ken, because Ken's going to provide a different perspective. Our lab's been really privileged to try to help work with NIOSH in any way. So with that, I'd like to bring up Ken, and thank you all very much for your attention.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. And there will be a drawing for the iPad, too, at the end of the presentation. No, just kidding. I'm sure we'd have even more folks here. But I'm glad to be here. I appreciate Tom inviting me and representing NIOSH for a discussion on some of the work that we've been doing in NIOSH, and his area has been assisting us in terms of technology and moving forward in some of the areas that our director, Dr. Howard, wants to explore over the next, in the near term as well as a longer term basis. For those of you who don't know, NIOSH is the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, and the goal is to provide guidelines, research, science in the area of occupational safety and health. And in that regard, there's a lot of work that's conducted for various areas, including surveillance, recommended exposure levels to various contaminants that workers could be exposed to in carrying out their work, and exploring new areas of science related to emerging fields. Nanotechnology is one that NIOSH has been involved in particular over the last couple of years. And nanotechnology as a science, it's being used quite a bit for development of many new products, and both in medicine as well as in various electronic areas. So, the particular area that Dr. Seville was and I originally had a discussion about, and then we engaged with the Associate Director for Communications of NIOSH, Max Lum, we started thinking about Dr. Howard's directive of taking the research that's been conducted and the data that's been gathered and thinking about new ways of presenting that data and making it more useful to the community and to folks who need to know about the NIOSH-related information for making the right decisions related to occupational health. So in that regard, one of the primary areas that NIOSH does work in is the National Personal Protection Technology Lab. And NIOSH actually does a lot of work developing, testing, and studying personal protection devices. Those include some of the things that you're probably very familiar with, such as gloves for latex gloves and things of that nature for personal protection. One of the main areas of research in NIOSH, because of the rate of morbidity and mortality, is in the area of respiratory diseases. And so personal protection as it relates to respiratory aspects is a very significant part of the Institute's work. And so one of the key things to be aware of is that the information that has come out of the research and science and testing relates to specifically respirators. And there's various kinds of respirators. It's actually fairly diverse. And I, unlike Dr. Taylor, I will tell you I'm just the opposite. I'm a computer scientist. I have very little knowledge of medical and public health aspects, so you will have to pardon any mistakes in terminology I make or anything that might seem different from the way a medical doctor might present it or a physician or a research scientist. But what strikes me is that in the area of occupational safety and health, that such a significant part of the U.S. workforce, 5%, 20% of all work establishments wear respirators. I mean, that's significant. I was not aware of that until I started working at NIOSH. So you can imagine how important it is to have the right types of devices and to find devices that really perform well and actually are effective. And as I say, there's various kinds of respirators. There's the N95. The numeric part represents the percentage of particulate airborne matter that the respirator itself will filter. So it filters 95%. There's also an N99, and that actually represents the ability to eliminate up to 99.8%, I believe, of all particulate matter. So what we were interested in is taking the information that we actually have out on the web and is readily available if you go to the NIOSH internet site, and taking that information and presenting it in a more novel and accessible way, particularly in a mobile environment. And the ability to do that was particularly endorsed by the area, the division, the National Personal Protection Technology Lab, that supports the information and conducts the research. And so the Associate Director of Science, Marianne Alessandro, as well as, I said, the Associate Director for Communications, Max Lum, and I and a couple of other folks from NPPTL got together and started brainstorming with Dr. Seville and a couple of his staff members on what we might be able to do in terms of taking this information that's out on the web, which is a very static, traversal type of, web traversal type of information seeking process, to find out information about respirators and make it more visual, make it more easily accessible rather, and make it more presentable to someone on a mobile app. So along those lines, the goals were to take the information as it exists and basically to make it more available and augment it if possible. And in particular, this was a prototype approach. We wanted to basically take something which we'd never done before within NIOSH and pursue trying to use the information in such a way that it could be basically reused or reconstructed as such that it would be more publicly acceptable and more generally understood than perhaps going through a series of web pages. So in that regard, in our discussions, there were several aspects of working with Tom's area that were significantly advantageous, and I want to echo Dr. Taylor's comments about how valuable I felt the work was with Tom's group. In particular, some of the things that they lent was a consultative process. So they worked interactively with us. We had engaging discussions, brainstorming. We talked about ways to take the data, what platforms we might use, what mechanisms we might use for displaying the information, what in particular we could do in a reasonable cost, reasonable amount of time. And what we found out of Tom's group was that they had very knowledgeable folks working in his area. They had unique skill sets, And NIOSH has an amazing workforce in the Institute. We have very knowledgeable research folks. We have very good IT people. But we really don't have folks who do development on mobile apps or really have not tried to take that perspective of taking the data and reusing it in a way that is mobile. And so Tom's group in particular had that background and knowledge, and I can't say enough about how much value they lent in terms of ideas. So the advantages, of course, the speed of the prototype. I want to echo Dr. Taylor's comment. It was incredible. We met with Tom's group, and within a month, they had, I say a month, it might have even been less, but they certainly had a presentable prototype for us to review and start commenting on. And it's very interesting, what we saw out of reviewing the prototype was that we started getting further ideas. It's amazing how when you actually see something, it sort of spawns secondary thought processes. In particular, in the case of the respirators for the N95, we took a look at it, and the Associate Director of Science, Mary Ann, said, well, you know, that's great as a one-way conduit of information. I wonder if there's a way to make it a two-way conduit. So perhaps to take the presentation of information, and there's aspects of respirators that are intriguing, like how well does it work? Does it fit? Does it, you know, and NIOSH cannot be, we cannot recommend specific products. If it meets certification, it's a baseline that is equal footing for everyone. But it would be useful to know, at least to have some secondary information from persons beyond just does it fit or does it meet the certification process. The other thing it sort of led to was an expansion beyond just N95. As I mentioned, there's other respirators. The N-series is actually not oil resistant, whereas there's another class of respirators that are used for oil exposures. So we started getting ideas as to what we might be able to do in terms of expanding it to other areas of certified equipment. NIOSH as a whole actually has a whole series of certified equipment. What I had wanted to show was I actually had a couple of web links, and I'd like to at least try to show you what Tom's group used as the base of information in terms of pulling the data that was available to him and reworking it into the iPhone app that I think Dr. Seville will be able to show you. So this is actually our web page website, and this is the trusted source information page. Now, one thing I might mention to you is that in NIOSH, certification is a very lengthy, thorough process. Lots of testing. We do extensive lab testing before making a certification. It's interesting because the NPPTL group has become aware that there's equipment, such as respirators, that are actually coming on the market that are not truly certified. If you have a NIOSH certified respirator or piece of equipment, there's actually a certification label. And the NPPTL group has become aware, and NIOSH as a whole has become aware, that there's actually black market or false equipment that's being produced. And because the NIOSH certification carries such a significant value, this fake equipment, if you will, which has been tested on its own and found to be not up to the level of standards and quality for NIOSH certification, is getting on the market. And so one of the things sort of coming out of all of this that we've started just thinking about is there's a campaign, a publicity or a public awareness campaign being considered called Know It's NIOSH, K-N-O-W. The effort would be to try to make the public, and in particular those involved acquiring personal protection equipment, aware that there is absolutely a certified set of equipment, and that there's also the potential that you could run into equipment that was not legitimately certified. And so we've talked about perhaps even somehow integrating, as I say, beyond this initial iPhone environment to a link or to a secondary, no, it's NIOSH type of app, and having a more broad perspective. But as I say, this particular web page, as we go through it, has a great deal of information. But as you see, it's fairly lengthy. That's not a criticism, it's just a lot of information. And so you have to navigate to this site, which NIOSH does have good links to, but you have to navigate to it, and then you ultimately land and can get to the N95 respirator. And here you actually get to the pages that have the detailed information about certified equipment, such as 3Ms. And so if you go to that, NIOSH doesn't endorse, but we do link to the specific respirator information that would be pertinent to the respirator that has been certified. And here you actually have the specific model itself. So that's what Tom's group was working against in terms of a data set or a data repository. And from that, we think they did a wonderful job in taking that static web traversal type of information and making it more easily accessible as well as very understandable in terms of the presentation path. And Tom, would you be able to present the prototype? I'd appreciate. Yeah. And Dr. Seville, actually, one of the things that I'll mention, and those of you who work at CDC or the federal government are certainly aware of this, there's a lot of standards for security, equipment, and things like that. One of the things NIOSH faces, the Institute isn't primarily based in Atlanta. NIOSH has several campuses throughout the country, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Morgantown, Spokane, we have a site in Alaska. And so we have some challenges in terms of compared to getting both the resources that are more centralized here in Atlanta for CDC, as well as some security-related aspects, including purchasing things like iPads, iPhones, and things like that. And so Tom's group was particularly effective at taking the information we gave them and being able to apply it and making it available and presentable to us from a distance, which was, again, truly invaluable. So, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, absolutely, please, no.
This app is not revolutionary, and not that in this case it didn't need to be revolutionary. Part of the way our lab sort of functions is getting a flavor and getting a feel of what NIOSH was thinking about and trying to sort of take baby steps, and then from there we try to accelerate quickly. So for us, jumping into some crazy app wouldn't be helpful in terms of at least getting a foundation, saying, Ken and your group, is this kind of what you're thinking about? So what you're seeing right here is not a revolutionary app. What you're seeing is relatively straightforward if you were to take the content that Ken talked about and put it into a standard iPhone for sort of, they call it a view controller, a standard way to view data. This is how we would do it. And we didn't fill out the entire database. We just said, here's an example. So if we said, here are the N99s, and of course it has to crash because it's a prototype. Worked this time. I think this will crash also. Let me just confirm that. Oh, it was one of the two crashes. So clearly there's a memory leak on one little spot we haven't fixed yet. And what this shows you is the content that he was showing in that database, and that once you clicked on one of those, it then shows you your basic information, and then it obviously would jump, if you clicked on this, it would jump to then a browser and show you that full content. So not revolutionary, but potentially it's
it's just one of those things where you would say, that seems reasonable. If you would say, given this database, that's a reasonable first-generation iPhone app. Yes?
Obviously, there are tons of respirators out there, and this would become a little late. When you have 200-300 different respirators, just the thought to create almost like a Google Backbase searchable engine architecture that would allow you to then delve into specific types of respirators, fits, things of that nature, rather than almost a hierarchical, this appears to be a hierarchical application, something more fact-based and searchable.
And we would push it even further than that, that we would want to have eventually a social aspect of that where people can vote thumbs up, thumbs down, people's feedback. So I think there's no question this needs to grow a lot. And I think part of our perspective was, in many cases, it turns out that our prototypes, like Ken said, just start discussion.
Right.
And in many cases, when we talk about the value of the lab, just starting the discussion is already value that we wouldn't have talked about this otherwise. So in some cases, this app right now, for the way this looks, may not go anywhere, and that's okay. It may turn out that 3 months from now, there's a whole new design. They said, listen, we'd like this. It got us talking, but we want to just move into the iPad. I'm saying, and that's okay from our perspective.
And interestingly enough, I just presented them with the National Department of Health conferences, and a lot of things that they have are very similar in respects to where they have a lot of materials, used to build materials, et cetera, and to compile large databases, compile that information in something intuitive, and allow them the search capabilities, et cetera, for those bits of material, et cetera.
Oh, and it's not glamorous, but there's a whole other part of this which has to do with just the database. And that part of our challenge, so separate from the nice look and feel, is figuring out a way, and I know Ken has a lot of challenges around, just updating the database is not trivial. And if we can, in time, maybe it's through the use of these devices that there's a much more user-friendly way for them to quickly make a change to the database, that would be very valuable as well. So there's wins at many different levels, and we're seeing, and at least the discussion is very, very helpful. So please, back to you, please.
Your point's very well taken. I agree. The concept of having a searchable type front end would be very valuable as opposed to just stepping down in alphabetical order through some gargantuan drop list. But the as Dr. Seville points out, the intent on this particular prototype was just to validate that we could take something that was basically the static web pages and make it useful enough on a mobile device. And it's been shown to various folks within NIOSH, and I think it has enough attention now that perhaps we may get funding, and therein lies, the resource aspect that truly leads to some opportunities for doing some new and creative things. But the prototype definitely opened the door. So, again, I have to give great credit to Tom's group for creating that seed of initiative within our area to pursue possible other opportunities. Maybe there'll be an innovation fund next year that we can apply for.
And of course, there are other companies out there that have seen this amazing database and chosen on their own to try to put it into the App Store and sell it. But of course, as someone from the CDC, our goal is this should be just available. And so part of our challenge is, of course, this is not about charging money for anyone, but making this a resource that best fits the needs of whatever technology the users happen to carry with them, that if they want this on the go, they should have this on the go the way they want it. That's been our goal. So we'll take any other questions, I guess, if you can. Is that all right?
Sure.
Any other questions from the group?
Okay.
Ken, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
So our third presenter, Rachel Karcher, could not be here today due to some issues back where she's from. So we've got a few more extra. We'll end a little early, and what I'll do, if you don't mind, I can show you a couple other quick demonstrations of some technologies on the iPad, if you all would like, and please feel free to yell and scream, and we can go over some of those. What I'd like to show you first, I want to warm you up on one first. Now I'll just hit the big one. Sure.
Are you using like Rose or Arcadia Mobile? Are you using any of those sort of platforms to support in between? And obviously, Android is a big part of the market.
absolutely. And that's a huge issue. And I'm actually, Brian, would you mind just your couple thoughts on what we're looking at in terms of different platforms and tools for mobile development?
We initially looked at, obviously, Xcode and Apple tools for iOS development, and then also Google's development for Android. What we're now looking at is there's basically a phone gap accelerator for iOS tools to shoot cross-platform forward, and sort of evaluating which one of those are not just functional, but also easier for development. CDC itself doesn't necessarily have a ton of iOS developers, and that sticks or something. Some of those are actually custom APIs, some are JavaScript, some are fixed. And so right now we're trying to find what we can do. We have a phone gap project going on now.
So let me briefly talk to you as if I were Rachel. So Rachel is from the STD team, and they said, we published these STD guidelines, and now the 2010 STD guidelines were published. And do you have any thoughts around what we could do with this as a mobile platform? So we said, we'll take a look. And the first thing we did is it looked very much like this. This was a first generation standard sort of a view controller where here's your list of information. Literally, it's just you grab all this content and you throw it into a section. And you would say that's rather crude and kludgy. Yes, but it was a first generation of, well, look, here's how, instead of a big PDF, here's what it looks like here. And then we took a look at it, and we saw, of course, people out in the industry started taking this the CDC content and charging $2 in the App Store. And so what we were looking at, and we're still looking at this right now, which is the next generation of the guide that looks like this. So it's got a bit of a Facebook app feel for the iPhone, where it's not just the guidelines, which is all text. It's also going to have images and a glossary and references and try to be much more of a rich application. And this is now currently that we're working on, and we're using this to do this phone gap prototype. So we're trying to see what's it like to build an app not in Objective-C for the iPhone, but using PhoneGap and seeing if we can now port this to multiple platforms. So this is kind of one thing we're working on as we speak in this area. And again, if you jumped over, and part of our goal with all this is a lot of crosstalk within the app. We want to have it that when you're in images and you say, oh yes, that's my disease, you click on that and it takes you right over to the discussion. So we want to make it that it's not just siloed content that looks pretty, but that the content can crosswalk with each other. And I'll change topics rather briefly if you don't mind. I want to briefly talk about MMWR. Most people here have heard about MMWR. I'm going to briefly talk about the first generation of the MMWR for the iPad. And this is using what's known as a split view controller, where you have your navigation, in a sense, on that left side, and the right side is where you actually see the content. Very briefly, if you were to click on the vital signs, and then you'd say, I want to look at the July 2007, a little brief discussion, click on this, goes to the website, pulls up the content, and there you go. Okay? Very straightforward. I would describe this as a very clean and standard first generation. If you took the MMWR weeklies and put it in here, here's how it would look. Oh, just to show you, if you take a podcast and click on this, there's your text of it, and let me see if this works right. Here we go. So if this works right, oh, look, let's see. The speaker. See. Oops. Play. Oh, I know. Hold on. Sorry.
Leads to 6 months. You can get it by consuming contaminated food or water, or coming in contact with a person.
Okay. So very straightforward. Oh, let me just. Okay. All right. So then as the R&D lab, we said, what would be the next generation of an MMWR platform for the iPad that was a little, sort of put things on its head? And that's where we came up with, we called it Map App. And this is looking at the weeklies geographically. So what we did was we took all the weeklies, took all the titles of all the weeklies, ran it through a free Yahoo service that geocoded. So if it saw the word Houston, it would do lat longs, and then bingo, you've got your MMWRs. And if you clicked on the spot, you'd see that this one says 8 MMWRs. You touch on that, and then you could select your MMWR, and it would launch. Ta-da! Straightforward. But what we felt was more value is to say, well, what if you wanted, just down at the bottom, you'll notice it says distance, date, and location. This would say, okay, I want to see only the MMWRs 100 miles from where I am within the past 2 weeks. And what we've done is we've showed this to the MMWR staff, and they're now deciding, our goal was what's possible. And we want to say, if you want to do MMWR like this, this is a way you can start to think about it. So this was just our trying to just, you know, really create that discussion. What I want to change gears now for a moment is show you this. And I'll finish in about a minute. I want to show you this. So this is live prototype. This is a web app. It's HTML5 essentially, so it's running on the iPad. This gets to what the field of that's communication surveillance / situational awareness. And so this is a web app that is taking the feed from Twitter based on specific keywords over here and visualizing it. So if there's specific keywords that you're focusing on, whether it's an outbreak, whether it's an earthquake, there are keywords you would just to get a sense, is there something going on that maybe we should be thinking about? So we were working with the situational awareness team at CDC to look into this, and I'll just tell you right now, this really is a proof of concept. There's a lot of issues, a lot of challenges with this, and we're just trying to see, is there value? And so we create a few different views, and we can go into details about this, but just think of it as if the situational awareness team wanted 3 seconds to look up on one of the large screens, this is one way to look at it, saying right now, for the past hour, this is what's going on, the size of the spheres, the number of tweets. There's a different view just to show you, which is a graph view. And it's a fascinating view, and it actually shows you, and when we're finished with it, you can look at it a day at a time for the past 12 days, or each hour based on the keyword terms you've chosen. Clearly, this prototype has a lot of fixing to do, things are overlapping, but it's a prototype. It's sort of going, oh, interesting, well, if that's the case, we need to change this up a little bit. But it's just interesting, we've been joking around with tired. Tired actually drops finally around 5 in the morning because everyone's tired. They finally pass out, and then they wake up again, and it goes back up again. But the last thing I want to show you, if you just indulge me, is the relationship screen. And there's a lot of issues around this, but at least it's helping us look at how to view relationships. We were trying to figure out, do we show spheres and draw lines, connecting dots? So if someone tweets fever versus if someone tweets, I have a fever and I have chills, it'll show up there. You'll see how you have fever, and any time within that time range, the other word was tweeted with it, we can, whether it's a few times, many times, or a lot, based on your criteria, you see relationships. Of course, there's a lot of noise in Twitter, and we know this, and other groups like Hopkins are looking at this, because of fever, you have disco fever, boogie fever, there's a lot of noise. So we're just still in the process of, there's two aspects. One is dealing with the data, and one is visualizing what's the best way to see is there something going on that we should look at. So this is one another problem, just to give you a sense of the kind of prototypes that our R&D lab is looking at. So we're really all over the map, and that's our goal. And if at any point, and there's a separate presentation later on that's talking about our lab, but if you and your institution need a resource to try out something, you can contact our lab and just think of it as remote access. You can remotely access your Windows 7 box or your Linux box from our lab and try out some things. So wherever you are, if you want to use our lab cloud, you can absolutely use it. So with that, I know we're a little bit early. I'll take any questions. We'll stay after. Please, question in the back. Absolutely. So let me just tell you very briefly. Here's the website for our lab, live, yay, phiresearchlab.org. And you'll notice it says downloads and tools. And right here where it says, it should be the second one down from tools, it says lab, here, wait. Whoop. Lab engagement request form. Fill that out. You email it to informaticslab@cdc.gov. That'll work. And we will talk to you. So the only caveats, you can't put live patient data in the lab. You can't hook to live EMRs and PHRs. As long as the data is realistic but not real, and you're not trying to take down a live production system, we are a sandbox that you have admin rights to explore and help make decisions. So that's we're very proud to have the lab, because we really feel like it can accelerate just a place to make some decisions you might not have otherwise. And with that, I'll leave this up and we'll take more questions. But it's a pleasure to talk to you about this, and we're very privileged to work with the many programs at CDC, and we hope to also in time have an impact to the CDC, the public health community as a whole. So any other, yes, question? Okay, so it's like this. Our lab essentially provides three different services. So one service is, if you said, I need five machines, I need a server, I need some infrastructure so I can do my work, we can provide you that piece of the cloud. So you would contact us with that form, and you'd say, I need a SQL server, and I need a MySQL box, and I need a web server, and I want Apache. We can get you set up. Secondly, if you said, listen, we need to work with you, we need some ideas, we want to get a sense of where we should go technology-wise, we can consult with your group. And third is to joint venture, saying, listen, can you guys help us with a prototype? Then if we'll put it in the list based on the resources we have, and we'll work with you on a prototype, whether it's a web-based tool or a mobile app, or using the Chumbi, whatever you're looking at. So just contact us with that form and we'll work with you. Absolutely. That's what we do. Please.
Two questions. Well, one of those, have you looked at EverPuffy? I looked at a lot of your visualization. I'm a Puffy guy. I've gone to this lecture theory and everything else. And a lot of the visualizations that you use are very interesting. And the second one is it a true cloud environment where we have dynamic resources available to us, or is it just a virtualized environment?
So Brian will be proud of me. The only way that we don't meet the cloud criteria is you can't provision the resources yourself. Kind of. Was that close? Or so you can't say, to log into a website saying, I want a Windows 7 box, hit generate, and it generates your own box. Okay, go ahead, Brian. Tell. Was that close?
First, we have over 30 pounds of Puffy books. Hey, Chris, we call that
a lot. By weight. By weight.
And then this sort of has five criteria for what a cloud is. We don't, like Tom said, it's not Amazon level, right? So you don't have all the 50 advanced stuff. But we do actually have, through some VMware tools, where you can go in and request more memory, more storage, additional VMs, or make a snapshot. And so we actually meet the requirements for what a cloud is, according to NIST, according to partners.
But I mean, it really is a
V-series infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely.
All
VMware.
Right, is it dynamic provisioning? Some of it is.
Some of it. Okay. That's what I'm curious, because we had a conversation not so long ago about the authoring capabilities and tools, rules, repository, etc.
Right.
Cloud, public health utilize that, and the work I'm doing, hopefully we'll collaborate with that. But it would be something that needs to be dynamically.
Yeah. I wish it were, but it turns out that if you have a Windows 7 box that's got 2 gigs of memory and you want 4, I actually have to go, Dale, can you give him 4 gigs? And we go and we change it. Right. But we have our cloud has the capability to store about 5,000 VMs, and our only challenge actually is we have a 10 megabit pipe into the lab, which means we can only handle about 200 concurrent users. But we can up that pipe when demand really starts to push us hard. So we are as much of a cloud in a sense, except for what Brian had said. I mean, we're essentially our own data center. We have a separate air conditioning system for it. It's unfortunate that it needs that. So thank you all for coming. We'll stay for questions, but it's a privilege. I thank you all for coming today. It's nice to talk to an audience about our lab. So thanks again to our presenters.